This week, the Working Tools Podcast is on the road at the Conference of Grandmasters of North America, being held right here in Seattle, Washington. So our format's a little different. We're going to have a series of short interviews with the attendees. We hope you enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, brethren all, welcome to the Working Tools Podcast, a casual conversation around Freemasonry. First, it's important to note that our thoughts and opinions are our own and do not reflect those of our Grand Lodge or respective craft or concordant bodies. Please connect with us and ask questions via our website at theworkingtoolspodcast.com.
So continuing our conversations on day two of the Conference of Grandmasters here in Seattle, we are with, if I may say so, Masonic podcasting royalty.
Your standards really. This shows how you've fallen.
So please introduce yourself.
I'm Maynard Edwards, 33rd degree. I am the Associate Director of Membership Services for the Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite Southern Jurisdiction. The only title I prefer is brother. And I'm a Joby dad. I'm a Demolay dad. I am a tall cedar. I'm a three-time fast master. I mean, the list goes on and on. I am a member of our Shrine Divan, a Bumi Shrine in Baltimore. I'm the second ceremonial master. So I've got a bunch of long titles, but really, brother, or just Maynard, or Hey You is fine with me.
And host of the Tyler's Place podcast.
Host of the Tyler's Place podcast. Although I will say I've handed over the bulk of our hosting duties on the podcast to Brother Matt Bowers, 32nd degree, for a bunch of different reasons, and he's doing a tremendous job. And what I do a lot of these days is our YouTube work, which is a monster in and of itself, the amount of work to do that. But yeah, I hosted and still host probably twice a month. I've lost count, at least 300 or 400 episodes of the Tyler's Place podcast.
Wow. That's terrific. So is this your first Conference of Grandmasters? I assume you've been to before.
No, I was the first one I went to was when it was in Baltimore, and I think I was an entered apprentice at the time. The Grandmaster, I worked on radio and television and was fairly well known in my hometown of Baltimore for a long time, from 1993 until 2012. And when I became a Mason, they brought me in to help out with publicity and things like that. And I was an entered apprentice when the Conference of Grandmasters was in Baltimore, and I was running around, didn't know anybody from anything. And then I didn't go again until last year in Alexandria, when we were helping with broadcasting the parade and doing things for that. And then this year I'm here helping the Masonic Renewal Committee with some media stuff as well. So. Professional. Sorry, guys.
That's all right.
So, how long have you been a Mason?
Been a Mason since 2011. December 17th, 2011, I was raised.
Wow, pretty recent, actually.
Yeah, in Masonic parlance, I'm just a kid.
So what? You said you were involved with radio. Is that how you got into the podcast? Is that
Well, yes. So the way I got into the podcast. Brother Dean Albin, who's our director of membership services, my mother lodge is about 30 miles outside of Baltimore, which is where the Baltimore Valley is. And the guys in my mother lodge decided they didn't like driving downtown anymore, and they wanted to start their own valley, which we did. Try not to make editing a nightmare for you. And when they started it, they called me and said, thank you. They called me and they said, you know, we're starting a new valley. Do you want to be a part of it? And I said, sure, what chair do you need filled? And they were like, well, all of them. And I said, well, I'll be Venerable Master, you know, egomaniac that I am. And they said, well, somebody's already Venerable Master, but you can be Senior Warden. So I was Senior Warden. We got the valley started. And it was the first new valley that had started in the Southern Jurisdiction in a long time. And the Grand Commander, past Grand Commander Ronald H. Seal, came out to celebrate with us. And Dean was there. And he is actually from the area that my lodge is in. I didn't know him at the time, and we got to know one another. He knew who I was, and it was a discussion that we started, and within a few months, I was doing the first Tyler's Place podcast. This is something I don't think I've ever told anybody. Originally, we were going to call it the Wisdom, Strength, and Beauty podcast and have three separate sections, like three interviews in each episode, but at the time, podcasting was not as well known as it is now. So getting people on was tricky. I wasn't going to be able to pull it off every, you know, as much as I wanted. So we pared it down to 20, and it was 27 minutes on the nose, because working in radio, the research told us that the average drive time is 27 minutes. And so we wanted one episode to be able to listen to on your way to or from work. So those are, and that's how it got started, and it's been that way ever since. And I left radio when my youngest was born in 2013, and started working full time for the Scottish Rite in 2017. Been there ever since.
Great. Yeah, we actually have a similar logic. We do 25 to 30 minute episodes for sort of the same reason. We also started out because we were cheap, and so we had the free version of Zoom, so we got cut off after 40 minutes.
So we had. I like it. Hey, you know, necessity is the motherhood of invention.
Sometimes you need a hard deadline to focus the mind.
Indeed. So how long have you guys been, now you asked me, so I get to ask you a couple of questions. First of all.
Yeah, Roger tried this yesterday. It didn't work either.
No. Didn't work out, okay. So what brought you guys to Masonry and then to Masonic podcasting?
Go ahead.
As far as Masonry goes, when our daughter was born, I was a stay-at-home dad, and I just was longed for the companionship of other adult men, staying home with the kid all day. And so that's sort of how I got into Masonry. As far as podcasting, I just enjoyed listening to podcasts, and I found out that he was on one. And I was like, I ran up to him at the annual communication one year and said, "David, you're on a podcast?" And so we.
I said, "Oh, you can put sentences together? You're on."
Perfect. Well, so what, when you are looking for guests, what is it that you guys look for in terms of a guest? I mean, I'm kind of, I'll talk to anybody, you know, whether or not it makes it to the air is a whole thing, but I'll talk to anybody. Because I'm sure at this point you're thinking, we're not going to use any of this. What do you guys look for in a good Masonic guest?
I'm walking
on. No, not at all.
One of the things that I like that we do is every year at the end of the year for the Grandmaster, we interview him about how his year went. And then when the new Grandmaster is installed, we talk to him about how his plans for the year. And we do that for both the Grandmasters of Washington and British Columbia, where our other host is from. And so that's a sort of a, I don't know if I call it a tradition, but it's something we do every time that we try to have consistently, and those are always great interviews, because, you know, grandmasters love to talk, so it's easy to get them going. I would say we don't do interviews every episode. We do some, like, we read a paper and talk about it kind of thing, so we try to get people in who are sort of topical to what we're talking about at that time.
Yeah, we were, in the beginning, it was an interview show. We kind of became the interview podcast, because there was other podcasts out there that were more esoteric, if you will, or discussion-based, and wasn't really interview, and so we kind of had that niche for a while. And then there's a lot of new podcasts coming out that were doing interviews, and we don't want to do that. And I wanted to get into a little bit more of the esoteric stuff, or at least some discussion-based. And so we've dove into papers and into books and things like that. And so right now we're doing a deep dive into Freemasons for Dummies as our next series, and we're hoping to get on as we dive into some of the sections, you know, bring in a Scottish Rite person, or bring in a York Rite person, or bring in a youth, or somebody that applies to that section of the chapter or whatever. We'll bring them in and have them talk to us.
Yeah. So now you escaped the question earlier. What was it that brought you to Mason? I didn't forget that. I was sidetracking you on purpose. But I've been doing this a long time. What brought you to the door of Freemasonry?
Ultimately, it was my wife's uncle. He's from the Midwest, Missouri, and my wife's family is very conservative, very quiet, and Uncle Jesse was not. And so I was always on Jesse duty, if you will, when we'd go to visit in Missouri, and got to know him over the years, and every conversation revolved around Masonry. He was a 50-year member and in the drill team, everything, and the stories always revolved around him and his brothers and Masonry and the things that he was doing. And so I didn't really think about it too much. And then I would absolutely say I'm a Dan, I'm a treasure, the
National Treasure
baby, right? So the movie came out, and I thought, and so the next time we visited, he was talking about it again, and was like an hour. We went to the other side of the state to Branson, and it was I drove him as he and I in the car alone, because they didn't want to be with us. They were all in the band together.
With the talkers by themselves. Eh?
And so he just filled my mind with ideas. And so I finally stopped and asked him. I said, so what's this thing about? And he turned to me in the traditional, oh, you finally asked the question. I'm going to get a hold of your grandmaster, and I'm going to get a hold of his grandmaster. And, you know, and I didn't know anything what he was talking about. And the grandmaster of Washington called me and said, so you're thinking about being a Mason? I said, maybe, I think so. Well, I'm going to have two guys call you. Well, who do you guess was the phone call? This guy named Al that lived down the street. Al Jorgensen called me and said, hey, I'd like to have a cup of coffee with you.
SGIG.
Well, yes. I didn't know then, right?
And it was Grandmaster.
Right? It was just Al from down the street. Right, right, right. We lived three blocks away. And so,
who's one, gosh, right? Talk about a pillar of
Freemasonry. Wow. So I had a conversation, and he knew way more facts and figures about Masonry than anybody should know, and I didn't know anything. But the key is that he set another meeting. He didn't let me leave without saying, when are we going to get together again? And so we got together and got together. He became my mentor, a very fortunate experience to be able to have as part.
Talk about a mentor.
Wow, right. And again, he was just Al. I didn't know who he was. And then I walked in the lodge room, and there's a big picture of him on the wall.
He's still just Al.
He is.
Still just Brother Al. And He if you make too big a fuss over the past Grandmaster this or the SGIG that, he'll bat it away from you.
Yes.
So what a wonderful brother. So that's a great story.
Yes, he tried to not let me go to his lodge. There was several lodges in between, different days of the week, and I said, I can't do this. I'm a member of this. I'm a member of that. I'm a little bit of a joiner. And so I'm a member of VFW and Lions Club, and I had other things going on at the nights. He said, well, my lodge does meet on Monday. And it was in a city called Auburn, and I went to Auburn High School. And there's just, I believe things happen for a reason, as if by magic, I say. And I was meant to be at King Solomon in Auburn. And I've had a wonderful 15 years, 16 years experience in Masonry. It's been great. And, of course, with Al as a mentor, how can you
fail, right? That's awesome.
Right?
Yeah. Great story.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you guys talked a little bit about David spoke specifically about the kind of, I guess not the philosophy, but, you know, sometimes you would talk about things back and forth, which we've never really gotten into on the Tyler's Place, just because generally it's been interview-based, because I always figure I'm the least interesting person in the room to talk about things. But I will say, one of the things I have developed a passion for is taking the lessons of Masonry, in particular Scottish Rite Masonry, and distilling it. And I've been accused of dumbing it down, which I don't think is the truth. And putting into things that are understandable or figure outable for guys who are working dads, who don't, you know, those guys who have hours and hours to pore over every word Albert Pike ever said and what he had for breakfast on the third Thursday in April 2 years before he died. More power to you. I don't have that kind of time. I don't know very many men that do. But, you know, there is a lesson in there that I can access and use to improve myself today. And so that is what I've sort of developed a passion for in these discussions. So what about you guys in terms of your growth as a Mason, so to speak?
So I think that...
See, they're confused because I've switched around.
Yes, yes. He's very sly. He's very sly.
This is 20 years on the radio.
Well, right where Roger, our senior Grand Warden, was in radio for years as well. And he asked the question yesterday of us, and then I immediately flipped it back, and he never recovered. So we're not doing too well. I think... In the very beginning, I didn't know what to know about Masonry. And, of course, in the very beginning, I thought that there would be an automatic course of instruction that we'd have to follow. Oh, every Saturday morning, you got to be here to learn to be Mason. And when that didn't happen, that became my expectation. And so I just kind of followed. I mean, in the beginning, I was so ignorant, I assumed that the stories were true. I didn't realize they're allegory, true allegory. I mean, they said that they were allegory, but I didn't listen to them that they were allegory. And so until I realized, wait a minute, that's not true? Oh, there's a story behind that, there's a learning lesson, and then that becomes, and I, for me, it took quite a few years to realize, oh, there's more to this, and there's so many layers. I think sometimes people make up layers just because they want to make up a layer, but it helps them for some reason.
I believe Albert Pike does that quite often, but I digress so that no one blows up your comments section. So how about you? What is it that, as you have started as the dad who is interested in Masonry to, you know, now a Masonic podcaster?
Interesting. So yeah, it's much more than, like I said, when I first joined, my wife's father was a Mason, but that was kind of really my only connection, and he had died when we were in college. So he was not a big influence on that, other than a place to start. And my uh, So at the time, like I said, it was just sort of the time to get together. We met twice a month, you know, get together with the guys kind of thing. And it became, I'm trying to come up in my head with how we became... My computer is just for show. He actually is the brains of the operation.
I was trying to see what gear and programs everybody's. I'm a nerd.
So I'm trying to put my finger on how it did change, but it did at some point become. I don't know if it was reading about masonry or what it was, but it did at some point for me become more of a. A working tool, if you will, to work on self improvement, to work on trying to be a better dad, trying to be a better husband, and it's not always easy. But I was talking with my son about this the other day, and he said, "What do you do? Why do you like masonry?" I was like, "I'd like to believe that it's made me better as a human being." I would question, you know, it's been 20 years that I've been a Mason. In 20 years, would I just become a better human being anyway? I don't know. I don't have a counterfactual for that. But I like to believe that it's a little more regimented in my mind, a little more disciplined.
I think you'd naturally become a better human being because you're talking to you for a few minutes. You're the type of person who is looking to grow, improve, and you know, Masonry provides us with a framework for that. So I think naturally you would have been better, but I think Masonry provides a smoother transition. And the other thing that it gives us, that really, if you take a step back, is the odds of the three of us meeting and talking and being in this place at this time are somewhat astronomical. I mean, it's just the odds of it happening are so infinite. It can't be calculated. But yet here we are, three different men, three different backgrounds, who come together with a common interest, a common goal to share something with the fraternity. And I think that is what Masonry gives us that we really can't quantify, because I think each of us, if we're any right-thinking man, matures and grow. Well, I don't know if I mature, but we grow theoretically over time. And but Masonry gives us not only the framework for that, but also so many great people, because all of the best friends I have in the world at this point are Masons. And I think that's when you grow up, your friends are. And I'm stealing this from my buddy Dave. When you grow up, your friends are whoever your parents happen to live near, or whoever, you know, and that's, you know, you go to school in that neighborhood. Those are your friends are by force. And then you get older and you get a job, and some of your school friends hang around, but then you gravitate towards the friends that are you're with at work for 8-9 hours a day, whatever it is. But none of that's based on value. That's based on geography. That's based on, you know, convenience. Or maybe your college, something like that. But it becomes value-based when you get into something like Freemasonry, because these are people that I'm choosing to spend time with deliberately. I drive past like 20 lodges to get to my mother lodge, because it's the neighborhood I kind of grew up in. And I choose to do that because these are the men who I am choosing to associate with, because our values, our ideals, our senses of humor are the same. And that's what makes Masonry such a great thing for improvement, that I'm finding other good men, which is the most egomaniacal thing I could think to say. I'm finding good men with which to associate. So
it's, I tell the story that when I was a young Mason, my lodge did a fishing trip. We had a little chartered a boat for the day kind of thing. And so it was a couple hours from home, so I drove out there, and I can't remember why, but I had to go later than everybody else, so I drove out there by myself. And on the way back, someone says, you don't have to drive back by yourself. Why don't you take Ed with you? And I was in early 20s at the time, and Ed was this crusty old guy, and I was like, oh, I got to go with Ed. You know, he's retiree. We don't have anything in common. It was like the most fascinating conversation I've ever had. He was a Greyhound bus driver for 35 years, and he had stories, and it was just... I would never have sat in a car for 3 hours with a Greyhound bus driver and exchanged stories. And it, there's a line in the ritual that it brings together men who would otherwise perpetually remain at a distance. And I, you know, just the men that I've met that I've been so impressed with, that I've tried to take little pieces from them and say, well, if I could take, you know, a little bit of Dave's technology and a little bit of Maynard's ability to speak and a little bit of this, that I would to put into my personal edifice.
Iron sharpens iron. It's a Bible verse. I forget which one it is, but it's. Yep. I think it sums up Mason.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I know you're an independent organization because SGIG Jorgensen wouldn't allow you to continue to walk around here on planet Earth. So I know you're Scottish Rite. So are you 32nd?
32nd
degree?
I'm actually a member of the Valley of Everett Scottish Rite, so 32nd degree also. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah.
I don't do as much with it as I wish I would.
But it saves me from having to give you the hard sell.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm actually good friends. We just got a new personal rep in our valley a few months ago, and he and I are really good buddies, so we're talking about some things. But someone asks me periodically if I'm in the Shrine or York Rite or whatever, and Scottish Rite's actually the only independent body I'm a member of. And I don't get there as often as I wish I could, so why would I join another organization that I can't get to either?
So. Understood. No, well, if you've got young kids, that's tricky. I mean, if it wasn't for that it is my livelihood, I probably would have less time for it. But I'm very blessed to be able to get to do this for a living and pretend like I'm working every day. And then when I go to an extra meeting or something, I'm like, honey, it's for work. What am I supposed to do? Not go to Shrine Bingo? But at the end of the day, it's not a real job. I get to do. I'm very blessed.
There are not a lot of people who get to be professional masons.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's a small list. It really is. And I don't take it for granted that. One of the reasons why I try and do. Valley secretaries or a personal representative or even a brother emails me or calls me on a weekend. I do my level best to get back to them right then because for everybody else, this is a volunteer job. And so I can have the luxury of keeping banker's hours to a certain extent. But, if you're a valley secretary in a small valley, nobody's paying you to do your job. So if you need me on a Friday and I can possibly do it without getting the evil eyeball from the lady, I'm going to do it. So that's part of the gig. And it's fun, too. I like to talk to a lot of people, and I do a lot with master craftsmen and all those things. So anything I can do to fit into the schedule of the guys who don't have the blessing of being professional masons, which sounds the most ridiculous thing to say, I try and do.
Awesome.
So,
yeah.
Ask away. Come on.
We should have a list to go. So this is not.
No, I sat. See, in fairness to these guys, I just sat down here and said, "Let's go." And they didn't have a chance to actually prepare.
So this is not your first conference of Grandmasters, then, of course.
Second.
Just the second.
Official.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there last year because we did the parade, which accidentally worked out. We did the and we did a little bit with the conference of Grandmasters, and then this year I'm here, not only representing the Scottish Rite, but also. Working with the Masonic Renewal Committee, which is one of the working conferences of working committees of the Conference of Grandmasters, and we've got a great working relationship with them. And both Southern and Northern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite support MRC as the Shriners International and so many Grand Lodges, and we're helping them with a lot of the media stuff because we have the expertise to be able to share, so we're trying to share it as best we can.
Yeah, we spoke with Most Worship Brother Bill Berman.
Oh, he's great.
Earlier, yeah,
Bill's wonderful.
He's his hometown and my hometown aren't too far apart.
Did he tell you any cop stories?
No.
You gotta get him to tell you some cop stories.
Oh yeah.
Well, we have to get him back again because I did have a little technical difficulty with some audio. Oh. But I fell on the sword, and he said he'd be happy to come back. Yeah,
Bill's a great guy.
Yeah, I think it was about the time when he started mentioning he was Witness Protection Program. Then audio stopped. I don't know. It was mysterious.
You'd be surprised how often
some government agency turned it off for us.
Well, when you sit down with a past grandmaster, equipment starts to fail. They have mysterious power.
It's the aura. Yeah.
Yes.
So you're a Beatles fan?
Indeed. Yeah. I still am a professional musician from the time I was 17 until early last year, and I still am. Not that I'll never play again. My wife had a cancer diagnosis, and we had chemo to go through. She had chemo to go through, and I
doing better. I hope
I held her up. She's doing great. All in the rearview, but it took. I wasn't going to be out on the weekend playing Rockstar if she was dealing with what she was dealing with. So pulled the band off the road the first time in 25 years I wasn't out on a weekend playing somewhere. So I've usually got the Beatles or Elvis on with some Elvis tattoo here somewhere. So if you look closely in all of our videos, you'll see the Beatles or Elvis somewhere.
It happened at the World's Fair. It was just right up the street, and the Beatles famously fished out of one of the hotel
Beatles and
windows.
Zeppelin, yeah.
Zeppelin, oh, I didn't know that one. Yeah. I bet Zeppelin left the room more destroyed than the Beatles
did. There's a very disturbing story about a mud shark that they used while they had a date. We'll go any further than that on the Masonic podcast.
That sounds disturbing.
Rock and roll podcast would be different, but this Masonic one, let's just say it's not a nice story.
So what's your day-to-day functions?
So that really could be anything from making, editing video and audio to working one-on-one with members to working with secretaries. Right now, one of the big things that we've been asked to, I always say our department is the one that figures it out. So when the world went sideways and we all had to figure out how to use Zoom, I was the guy inside the Supreme Council headquarters that was teaching all of our secretaries how to utilize it best and, you know, had to make myself an expert at that. I don't know if I made myself an expert, but I gave it a shot. We are still writing and creating content for Master Craftsman and the other online programs that we have. A lot of times I spend talking with individual brothers about various things that they have happening, different ideas. One thing we're working on right now is trying to translate some of the Master Craftsman stuff into Spanish and other languages for Freemasons who are not English, native English speakers. Obviously, Freemasonry stems from the, air quotes here, English-speaking world. But, you know, there are many men around the world who do not speak English, and we want to have them have access to Masonic learning materials as well. So that's been I've been pretty passionate about trying to get that done. And to my knowledge, the Scottish Rite will be the first major Masonic entity to try and tackle that. We expect to launch the first Master Craftsman course in Spanish within the next 2 weeks,
wow,
which is pretty exciting.
Oh, that's
so
terrific.
I haven't told anybody that yet, so you got to speak.
Publish today. We're going to publish that today.
I mean, I got to check with the Grand Commander. I'm pretty certain I know he's excited about it. The other thing that I get to do is I get to work in the House of the Temple, which is just, I don't know, I know you've been there.
Yeah.
It's an exciting place to work, to be a steward of that building, and to, when brothers come in, try and give them tours, time permitting. And, every day could be a little bit different. It really could. And it's a great blessing to work where I do with the team that I get to work with. Brother Matt Bowers, I think I mentioned he's taken over a lot of the podcasting duties, and he's a baby Mason. He's been a Mason for about 2 years. But he's got a passion for it. And he and I have been friends for, much longer than I'm going to admit, but after the pandemic started to end and he was inside and everybody was inside so much, he started coming to my lodge's food truck events and hanging around where he knew most of my buddies and stuff, but the more he grew and hung out with them, the more he realized, oh, this is something special. And I never once talked to him about Masonry. He finally came to me and he said, I think I want to join a lodge.
That's awesome.
When I needed a production helper, he came aboard and here we are. So, like I said, that was about 2 years ago.
That's
so
a great story.
It is.
So you were kind of neighborhood friends?
No. He was my drummer for... Still is, I guess. Both of us have taken the band off the road for a while. He was my drummer for 15 years. He used to come in on our radio show with other bands and, you know, would play and do different things. And so I got to know him. And he managed a local music store and would give me free stuff, which was... So, of course, we became very,
very good friends.
And then, he would... when I needed to fib to my wife about how much I spent on a particular guitar, he would help out with that as well. And I mean, not that a good... I wasn't a Mason when I had it. Doesn't count. I also get to work with Brother Chris Rooley, who is a historian and an author, does a lot with the Supreme Council. Art De Hoyas, Brent Morris, guys you should talk to are far more interesting than me to speak to. Chris is here. I don't know if you had a chance to talk to him yet. He's a tremendous talent and a gifted historian, so... I'm blessed.
He wrote the book about the Masonic activities in the White House?
Yeah, he went through and cataloged basically from Washington on through the first, through George W., I guess prior to the Obama administration, every interaction that Freemasonry had with the presidents. And so it's very well done. And he's working on another book on Lafayette now that should be out later this year. He's a very talented author, a good friend and brother. So if you don't get him now, you should get him in the future. He's good.
Yeah, we've talked to him about him coming over here. We'll have to nail him down for a solid time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Art's tomb tour, the tomes tour. That was spectacular.
I didn't get to do that. Oh. I was so at the biennial session, there was a tour of books. It was 10 books that predate Freemasonry that are in our collection. And I know a couple of them, but I didn't get to see that. I was really ticked, and Art won't redo it because he's doing it to irritate me, I know. Can you tell me? No, yeah, you missed it. Sorry, I said it would be the only time. So I'll get it out of him eventually. I'll have to buy him lunch or something.
Yeah, there you go.
I keep saying it'd be fun to have our – we have a very small collection in Washington Library Museum, and it'd be really fun to have a little mini tomes tour. That'd be fun.
Absolutely. We just lucked into it being in Seattle.
Yes, for sure, for
yeah.
sure.
And yeah, getting to talk to you is a great opportunity. Thank you very much for taking the time.